Welcome to the Plant a Trillion Trees podcast. I'm Eva Monheim.
And I'm Hal Rosner. We are both certified arborists through the International Society of Arboriculture. The purpose of our podcast is to encourage tree planting and proper tree care for our urban forests, which include neighborhoods, parks, and other open spaces.
We will also cover a myriad of tree topics, including the important role trees play in relationship to the climate crisis. Thank you for joining us. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Monheim Microphones. Monheim Microphones designs and handcrafts top-tier studio microphones and preamps right here in the United States in Hollywood, California. Their incredible line of innovative microphones and designs are used around the world by everyone from podcasters to top-charting record producers and singers. They recently released their new royalty microphone, Monheim Microphones Unparalleled Excellence, monheimmicrophones.com.
Verdant Earth Educators provides dynamic in-person training and online learning opportunities for environmental and horticultural businesses. Owned by ISA-certified arborists and former university faculty, the Verdant Earth Educator team provides consultations on tree care and recommends climate-resilient opportunities for your valued green spaces. Verdant Earth Educators is all about seeding knowledge for success. Find Verdant Earth Educators at verdanteartheducators.com.
This podcast is being recorded on November 10th, 2023. Ron Kinney is the production manager at Monrovia's Oregon Nursery. Ron has a degree in ornamental horticulture from California State Polytechnic University and has been in the green industry for more than 30 years. Part of his role as production manager includes responsibility for tree production, both in containers and in-ground field production at Monrovia's California and Oregon nursery facilities. Ron and his wife also manage and operate a 20-acre hazelnut orchard in Oregon. Welcome to the Plant a Trillion Trees podcast, Ron. We're delighted that you could be with us today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Ron, we just would love our audience to hear a little bit about your background and how you found your way to Monrovia, which has a great reputation. Tell us as much as you can about your educational background and what you're doing for Monrovia.
Okay, my educational background is I went to Fullerton Community College down in Fullerton, California, received my AA degree in horticulture, and decided to go ahead and continue my education and transfer to Cal Poly Pomona, where I received my BS degree in ornamental horticulture. I was a struggling student at the community college, getting C's and unfortunately D's, didn't have any direction. My father owned his own landscape maintenance business for many years, and he also worked for the city of Anaheim in the parks department. So I was always out working with him on the weekends, pruning plants, mowing, and all that stuff. And one day, I was at Fullerton College, I took a biology class, and I got along with that professor, and he says, you know, you should try some horticulture classes. And took horticulture classes, and I went from a CD student to straight A's. Like, oh, this must be my niche.
That was fortuitous that he saw that in you.
Yeah, that was my niche. And I started with Monrovia. I had a passion for propagation, and I started as assistant propagation manager, and I did that for a few years. And then I eventually went my way into production. So I've worked at all four West Coast nurseries for Monrovia. I've been with the company over 30 years. My background is production manager and grower. I've grown a wide variety of different categories of plants, pretty much every category that we grow. What we call category would be like trees, vines, perennials, camellias. That's how we generalize our categories. So just recently, I became the corporate green goods buyer, and that's where I work closely. I'm part of the new plants team. So I review plants that are brought here for our nursery to trial. So I work with the breeders and the other few people that bring in new plants to Monrovia. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Sure, there we go, a nutshell. I like that. So where are you based now?
I'm based in Oregon.
Okay.
So yeah, like I said, I started in Azusa, and there's no nursery in Azusa any longer. They sold off that property. And Vet Nursery in California is in Central California, which is in Visalia. And I worked there for 12, 13 years. And then I've been in Oregon now for 18 years.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about the history of the Monrovia Company.
Well, we're coming up on our 100th year celebration.
Goodness.
We turn 100 years old in 2026, which is coming up. It's still family owned. There was two original founders of Monrovia, Harry E. Rosedale and Martin Ushery. So those were the two families. And it did start in the city of Monrovia, and it was in a river basin. And one time a flood came through and took out most of the nursery. So then that's when they purchased the property in Azusa.
Mm.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest, not I would say one of the oldest, but it isn't getting up to be an old nursery, 100-year-old. So,
yeah, that's very impressive. With your duties, just as an outsider looking at a company like Monrovia, it seems as though the duties of your work in production, it seems like an enormous number of responsibilities.
As a production manager and grower, you have other managers that report to you. So you have a pruning coach, a spacing coach, someone that we call canning, that's the shift up. And so you're responsible for making sure everything gets done on time and efficiently. And like I said, I've grown all the different categories. So it's all making sure the plants are ready on time when the customer wants them. That's the bottom line.
Right. So if we stay with woodies and if we stay with trees for purposes of this conversation, and I'm thinking hypothetically, you know, tell me about a new oak introduction. If we could just play with something like start to finish, you know that 3-4 years out, you have to deliver a new cultivar. And I'm not assuming, how does that begin in terms of the starting place with cuttings or seeds or?
Starting place, it depends on the type of tree. Oak tree primarily are seedlings, but there are selections of oaks out there. And so if it is a selection, then those plants would have to be grafted. So let me change the genre from oak to a redbud, Syrsus.
Okay, sounds good.
If that's okay.
Yep.
So a Syrsus is, there are many different selections of Syrsus. So you would have to grow the seedling so you would be able to graft on the selection. So when we work with breeders, they already have their selection made and they offer us their trees. They could be a small 1-gallon plant for the most time, or even just a tree band. We would plant that up into a what we call a 5-gallon can and observe it and to see how it performs. Most of the trees that we look at are the small to mid-sized trees because most of the yards now are small. So we're not necessarily looking at the big, beautiful, giant trees that grow up there, even though we do grow some of those. Most of our market is to the independent retail garden centers for the homeowner. So we look at, like, again, how they perform in the container. If they bloom, what are the flower colors? Foliage is always another factor. There are variegated trees. There are trees that have fall color, for example. So there's a lot of different things that we look at.
Sure.
When we do the trees.
I would imagine you're looking at stability too, if it's a variegated plant, to make sure that it's very stable. It's not going to revert back to its original. Is that what you
correct?
You're testing? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Most of the time, if they are selections or they're variegated, they're grafted. So those are pretty stable. It's when they go into like to grow plants from tissue culture.
Right.
That's where you could lose the variegation.
Yeah, it's interesting doing this podcast. Even a radar goes up on occasion, and it does seem. I think this is the third nursery professional talking to us about red buds. I don't know what that means for the tree universe, but we've been hearing a lot of new varieties. We've heard the homeowner preference for smaller trees and the continued opportunity to develop new cultivars. How many Syrsus are you growing these days?
We grow probably about a good dozen.
Okay.
12 or more. And most of them are, you know, are the smaller types and the newer cultivars that are out there.
Do you get a lot of requirements for like weeping forms and ones that might be spreaders? I've seen some of the weepers that are good ground covers. They're not trees at all. They cover the ground. Once they cascade off their trunk, they just take off like a carpet and they're quite attractive, but they're no longer what I would classify as a tree. They're a ground cover.
A tree. Yeah. We do grow the weepers, but not the ones that grow flat to the ground. We do grow the ones that eventually go up and then kind of mound down. There's one called Ruby Falls, which is pretty nice. It has the burgundy color foliage. And when you think of redbuds and cerces, you do think of blooms, but some of these new cultivars, it's not necessarily the blooms that they're looking for. It's just the foliage is so nice.
Now, see, somebody who likes to cook or bake, I would be looking for the buds to, you know, sugar coat my flowers and use them for dressing and things like that, or the pods for stir fry when they're fresh and green.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, stir fry the pods? Sure. Oh, it's a thing. It's a thing. And they're very high in vitamins too. Vitamin C.
Oh,
well, there you go.
Yeah. You know, you could have a perennial pea in your backyard.
There you go.
Another thing we've been hearing a couple times is concern that students coming out of the colleges and community colleges, that there's a little bit of a shortage of the student that wants to get into breeding and seed collection and propagation. Have you found that to be the case?
Yes, but it seems like just recently, like just the past couple of years, because Monrovia offers a intern program. And this past 3 to 4 years, we've had at the Oregon Nursery, 5 to 6 students come and do their internship here. And most of them are into plants. We had a breeder here just yesterday, and he had those plants select. And he had some young people with him, and just the energy that they had with talking about plants was really fascinating to me. It was nice to see, you know, the next generations. I mean, Cal Poly Pomona, where I graduated from, used to be a huge program in horticulture, and it just, the attendance dwindled. And so now it's not even called horticulture. They combined departments. But I do feel that the plants are going to stimulate the younger crowds again, most definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we're going to be paying attention to on our podcast, because if there's anything that we would like to do is to help the industry where they might have holes with employees, maybe, or who needs to be trained and where should they go and, you know, what schools are offering. And maybe it's an apprentice program, maybe it's an internship like your company offers, but, you know, people need to really understand what it takes to get a plant to market. And I think very few people do. And I know I talked about it in my classes because I worked in PR at one point, releasing plants with Star and a couple other companies. And I just feel that that's an area that is talked about very little. And unless you're in the industry and know about it, people don't know about it.
To bring plants to market, like I said, it can't be unique. A perennial, you could bring it to market that year and have, you know, big numbers, where if it's a grafted conifer, you're talking 5, 6, 7 years before you build up that product, before you can release it. Yeah, it's amazing that plants can take that long. There's one variety, we call it a pom-pom. It's a Pinus nigra, and we shape it into a bald, you know, bald plants. And the production time from when the seed was planted to where it grows all the different sizes is 9 years before it's finished. Nine years.
Then you wonder, you know, people wonder why a plant costs so much. Well, if you were sitting in a nursery for 9 years, you'd want to get some payback for that plant, you know? And that's something too, you know, I want to say educating the consumer on why certain things cost what they do, because you have a 10-year period or a 9-year period that people are fussing over that plant to bring it to market. And people just don't understand that. Or a tree, for example. I talked to one of the nurseries, I think it was Moons down in Georgia at the time, and he asked them, you know, how long does it take them to get? Sometimes it'll take 20 years to get something to market to make sure that you have enough of it. And, you know, in one lifetime, a human lifetime, you might only bring 3 or 4 new trees in your lifetime to the market. And that's your contribution to the industry for your life, you know? So people don't understand that. And I think that that's one of the things that we like to get across on the podcast here. And, you know, out large when we're teaching, it's important because people like yourself are not a dime a dozen. Let's put it that way.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about the breeders that you work with? Are they small companies? Are these people that work out of their garages on the weekends with their explorations?
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes.
That's pretty much it, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, we could. It's from all over the world, basically. We bring in plants from Europe, but it can be, there's one person that he's a professor in Oakland, and I forget what he teaches, but it has nothing to do with plants, but he loves to breed roses. And he does that as a hobby. And that's just an example of a person comes to Monroe and say, I have these plants. Would you like to trial them? And yeah, they all different types.
I wonder if there's a breeder out there that's going to bring, you know, that next oak or elm or hackberry or London plane and say, hey, I'm pretty sure this tree can grow year round with no water and 87 degrees average temperatures or something like that.
Well, that was, I told you about, there was a breeder here just yesterday, and they were from Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what they're looking at, are plants that can handle the droughts and cold temperatures, because it does get cold in Colorado. And that's what they were just very, very excited about. And they did drop off an oak, and I can't remember what the name of it was. They just dropped it off yesterday. So we're going to be trialing that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit more about what it looks like for a company like Monrovia? You know, we tend to keep our conversation mostly upbeat, but once in a while it does get a little gloomy when we talk about, particularly on the East Coast, where we, you know, we'll lose a genus such as Fraxinus, or the possibility of our American beech beginning to succumb to beech leaf disease. You know, there's some darkness there. What's Monrovia's outlook for working with species that, you know, particularly for some of these hot, dry climates that Southern California deals with, and certainly Texas, and then points, you know, along the eastern seaboard?
Well, like I said, we know that there has been a drought on the West Coast and down into the South. Just these past few years, the heat in Texas and all through the South has taken its toll on landscapes and landscape trees. So we do pay attention to environmental issues, environmental changing, global warming, if we want to talk about global warming.
Yeah.
We take all that into consideration when we're looking at bringing in new plant material, not necessarily trees, but in general.
Right.
That's what we look at.
I would imagine that also goes into your woody plant, your shrubs and other plants as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an idea of some of the plants that you feel are going to be stirring the market in the next couple years that your company is going to be releasing or has already released that you feel is going to make a huge difference within the paradigm of sales marketing?
You caught me off guard on that one. So are you talking about a specific plant category, or are we still talking about trees?
You can talk about trees and or shrubs, because I think shrubs are another one where there's a category. Like, we know that everybody knows that we're in the century of hydrangeas since 2003. And I actually happened to be involved with the release of The Endless Summer. So that was something that was pretty big. But after that, we saw this real scurry to get breeding done in hydrangeas, not only Macrophylla, but Arborescens and Paniculata and Serrata, and then the list goes on. So
hydrangeas aren't going away anytime soon?
No, they're not. And guess what? They are not. They're not grandma's plant anymore. They haven't been since 2003.
No, we have a lot of breeders bringing in hydrangeas. And it was, you know, I'm part of the new plants team. And so we do bring in plants for review. And in some cases, we pass on these plants, right? And for one reason or another, they didn't perform well in the container. It was hard to grow. It could be other things. And so we take them home. Sometimes, you know, we offer them to our employees if the breeders is okay with that. Sometimes we just have to destroy the plants. But where I'm going with this is, I was just in my yard yesterday, and it was cold and gray, Oregon weather. And I looked at this hydrangea, and it's about 18 inches tall. And the flowers are purple blue, and It's not like a fresh looking flower. You could tell it's been aged in and senesced. But I looked at it, I go, why did we pass that plant? I don't know the name of it. You know, sometimes you just bring stuff home, you stick it in the ground, and it is the most beautiful hydrangea. And it's like, heck, I'm lucky I have it in my yard. Yeah. So it's like, hey, maybe I should bring those, you know, take some cuttings and bring it back in and look at it again. But I don't remember who the name of the plant.
Is it possible to take it back in and take another look at it? And, you know, that's something that I remember Will Radler saying about the knockout when we were working with that. He pulled that out of the ground as a seedling and threw it on the compost pile. And then when he looked at it a second time and said, well, you know what? None of the other ones have red foliage. Let me put it back in the ground. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest
mm-hmm.
is history. So, yes. You know, it could be that moment where you think you're going to get rid of it and then you pull it back and you rein in the horse and say, okay, no, we're going to keep it.
Mm-hmm,
and,
yeah.
So hydrangeas are obviously very popular, but is there anything else that you can think of that you see coming down the line that it may not be for our colder climate, but it might be something for a hot climate that you have out there that you can talk about?
We have a new Daphne that is very beautiful.
We love Daphnes.
It was a find by one of our, at Monrovia, we don't call ourselves employees, we call ourselves craftsmen. So I keep slipping that we're craftsmen, but one of our craftsmen found a selection here in the nursery and put it in our trial garden. And we decided to go ahead and patent and trademark it. And we are going to be releasing it this year. It's called Daphne Banana Split. It's a variegated yellow foliage with green stripes in it. And the buds are pink when they open up and kind of open up to a white flower, very fragrant. It won the plant of the show at the Far West Trade Show here in Oregon. So yeah, that one's going to be stellar, I think.
A hot ticket. And, you know,
hot ticket.
We're getting hotter as we speak here. I'm looking out my window and I see gorgeous orange and yellow leaves. But we have things that I couldn't grow for my clients or put into my clients' gardens 40 years ago that we can grow now here in a snap. And within that 40-year time, you think to yourself, how in the world could that happen where 10 or 15 varieties of plants or species of plants can grow now that couldn't grow here before? So we've been experimenting with Daphnes. We have been mm-hmm. experimenting with Daphnes a lot, and Longwood Gardens has quite a number of them where I work, and that's really a great thing. You know, when people go buy something and it smells delicious, you know,
mm-hmm.
or osmanthus, for example, that smells wonderful at this time of the year, that's great. So, yeah, any trees that you see coming down the line?
I'm looking at a list on my computer here.
That's fine.
There's I haven't seen it yet, but it's a cirsus. It's called Zigzag, and they're coming from Israel, or Israel, and the trunks grow kind of like a zigzag pattern up. I've seen pictures of it, and it does get a purple flower, so we're going to be bringing those in. Those are going to be the first ones that they've released, and so we're going to be able to get those all here at the nursery. We're going to have some stay in California, and they're going to grow here, and it's still kind of a trial for us, but I'm kind of excited about that one because I think it's going to be a unique plant.
Well, you know, this past spring here in Philadelphia, they've been using cirsus as a street tree
mm-hmm.
in the small spaces. They're shorter, so you don't have to worry about power lines. But this year in particular, and I know I've talked to Hal about this, you almost can have a car wreck because the trees are so spectacular. This year, I had to pull over on the side of the road to look at Appalachian Red because it was just so incredible. And
that's
I've never seen them. Well, more and more people are planting them. So the more you get in the environment, the more people notice something, the more they want it. And mm-hmm. if Zigzag is anything like that, you can imagine that people even want it for a street tree.
Yeah, the other one that it was a star release. It was the Flamethrower. That's another
love it.
Another beautiful, yeah, beautiful, beautiful one. I even had to put one in my yard.
I'm wondering what your yard looks like, Ron. As far as do you ever get the message like, hey, you've maxed out your property, or do you still have room?
I have the honor of living on 25 acres.
Oh. Okay.
So my backyard is a really long planter area. And like I said, I plug in stuff as I go, and my wife enjoys it too. So she likes to tell me where to plug things in, and I turn around and put them somewhere else.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that dynamic. Before we want to be sure we get a chance to talk to you about your Filbert farm, but before we move to that, Ron, can I ask about Monrovia's interest or work with native California plants? Is there ever a focus on extending into the woodies that are native to California?
Yes, we have tried that. Native growers are specialty growers because they are hard to grow in containers. We're not experts at that. We grow a lot of different varieties, and natives are tough.
Yeah.
They are tough to grow. And if we can grow them, we will. And we have in the past. I mean, it all just depends on what the market. We're in the business to be profitable nursery.
Sure.
And so if we can grow these plants and the market is there, we will grow them. Definitely.
Okay.
Do you look for new technology when it comes to pots so that things are easier to grow in? Do you still grow in plastic, or do you have something else that you're working with? I know a lot of people are using cloth bags.
We still grow in plastic. We have tried over the years to try some of the containers that break down into the soil. You just plant the whole plant in the ground, and it just hasn't worked for us. That doesn't mean we're not going to keep looking at different ways. One thing is we used to use redwood stakes, and now we use bamboo because it's more friendly to the environment. You know, we're not cutting down trees. It's bamboo, which is basically a grass. So we switched over to bamboo instead of redwood stakes in most of our production. So because we ship from the East Coast to the West Coast, so we have to have a sturdy container to get our plants to our customers. So that's been another drawback for us on trying to use like bags to grow in.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's the Filbert Farm portion of the interview. Before we started talking to you, Ron, before we started recording, we found out that you have a very successful enterprise going. And how did you find your way to Filbert's is my first question. I think many more to follow.
Well, me and my wife, we relocated from Visalia, California, Central California to Oregon. We lived suburbia lives when we were in California. And when we moved up to Oregon, we had an opportunity to live on this property. And we were looking at living in different places. And we lived there for about a year before we were trying to find a place to purchase. And it was at the house that we're in now. We were renting it. And the owners decided to sell the property. And so we went ahead and decided to buy it. We enjoyed not having neighbors. There's neighbors fairly close, but we just like that space. And it's up on a hill, and it was all grass down below that they used for cattle. And it was just basically just kind of a grass field. And so we decided to lease the field to a farmer, and he would just pay us annual per year per acre. But unfortunately, the ground needed to be tiled. So that tiled meaning is for drainage for the water. So only 8 acres of the 20 was actually farmable. So we assumed a loan, farm loan, and did the tiling. And then the farmer planted grass and for grass seed. And, you know, there was a lot of hazelnuts in the area. And me and my wife decided, well, man, you know, maybe we should plant some trees. And the rest is history. We planted 2,000 trees. And I did the learn by doing. I didn't do the actual planting of the trees. I had hired that out. But I've done all the pruning. And yeah,
so
I've pruned every one of my trees.
Your Filberts, are they, tell us about the stock that you bought. Were they bare root trees, and were they all of the same cultivar?
They're all the same cultivar. They're called Jefferson, and that variety came from Oregon State University, who brings most of the new varieties to market that are Filbert blight resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And Jefferson was about the third one that came out. So that's why we chose that, and they're available for sales. The particular plants that we purchased, they were in tree bands, potted tree bands. and they were two-year-old plants that were grown from tissue culture.
Okay.
So you don't have the graft union that you have to worry about.
Yeah, so the farmer farmed for a couple of years after that, and then we decided to take out the grass, and it's just all trees now.
And what's a tree band?
A tree band is a potted, about a 3 by 3 inch pot, and it's about 6 inches deep.
Okay.
So it's like, it's almost like a plug.
Yes.
So it's like a plug we use here for restoration work. It's interesting because we have hazelnuts here, and I've always admired them. At the university where I used to teach, we had the Turkish filbert, which is such a gorgeous tree. Oh my gosh. It's just have it stand there in your garden. It makes you look good because the bark is so gorgeous. But we had the beaked filbert and then the American filbert. And the American filbert, there was like one place, now there's two places, that have the most gorgeous plant. When I say plant, the one must have been there for close to 80 years. And it's enormous, very wide and gorgeous. And it's in a botanic garden. And the other one is at Longwood in the botanic garden. And it's huge. But we don't really get lots of fruits on ours. And, you know, for the students to see it and ID it, they can do that. But the fruit is what I wanted them to see. And it was the beaked filbert that we would get more nuts on than the American filbert. It's a much shorter statured plant. And we would get, you know, big handfuls of nuts coming off of those. So the whole idea of having a filbert on your farm is very exciting to me. It's like, you know, that would be the best of all worlds to have filberts growing in your backyard. Although I'm allergic to nuts because I can't eat them, but I still like filberts to look at because I think their structures, their fruit structures are so interesting.
One thing to mention too is that the Jeffersons or the hazelnuts do need pollinators. So we do have three pollinators planted, three varieties of pollinators. One is the early release of pollen, then there's the mid-season release for the pollen, and then the later part. Because the Jeffersons will pollinate themselves, but you want to have those pollinators to kind of get the early and the late setting of the seed.
Oh, interesting.
Because they have a very strange pollination period. They have a really long pollination period. I guess for safety reasons for the plant, would you surmise that would be reason why for the plant to have greater survival?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when did the Jeffersons get planted?
We planted them in 2000. They were two-year-old plants in 2014.
Okay, so they're not even 10 years old, and you've had a great bounty. What height are they, and what is their trunk diameter?
The trunk diameter is probably about 5 inches, I would say.
Okay.
And the trees are probably about eight feet tall to 10 feet tall.
Okay, do you expect them to get much bigger?
Like I said, the oldest trees, Jeffersons, are probably only in the ground 15 years, so we really don't know the full size of them. And I have a couple of different soil types on my property, so some of the trees are a little bit stunted because they don't like the soil that they're growing in, but the other part of the property that they're growing fantastic. And some growers, when you plant your hazelnuts, they plant in double density, so they plant twice as many trees, and it's because they can get, you know, nuts faster. But then after about that 9 or 10 year mark, you have to go through and take out every other tree. And me being a tree lover, Scott, why would I want to plant twice as many trees and then go back and cut them all down? That didn't make any sense. Plus, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So you're saying that they have a solitary they have a solitary trunk, right? Your trees, or do they have multiple trunks? Because in the American stands have multiple trunks.
No, it's a single.
Okay, so what is the species that it's crossed with? Because it has to be crossed with some type of European or Asian form, because ours are stands of multi, it's like a big shrub, the American filbert.
They do sucker. Our plants do sucker, and we have to spray the suckers. But plants that are grown from, especially trees, or they're grown from tissue culture, they tend to sucker more anyway. And so they are grown on their own rootstock because it's a tissue culture plant. Yeah.
But
if you were to let it go, it probably would get pretty bushy looking.
And that's what the question I have for you is, do you have any idea what they're crossed with? In other words, is it with a Turkish filbert or is it with an Asian filbert of some type to give you that disease resistance? Because I know that our Turkish filberts produced like crazy when we had them at the university, but the trees were about 40 to 50 feet tall.
Yeah, I don't see these trees getting that tall. My neighbor planted their Jeffersons a couple of years before me, and they tend to kind of grow a little bit more spreading instead of upright. And they have the old, but it's the Barcelona filberts. And those were the ones that were predominantly planted in Oregon, but they also are very prone to disease or the filbert blight.
Mm-hmm.
Those trees are 30 feet tall.
Yeah.
Okay. How are they handling weather extremes that Oregon might be experiencing? Like if there are periods of high heat or periods of extended drought, are they pretty tolerant? Do you see them as fairly tough trees?
They are pretty tolerant. I was fortunate to where I was able to irrigate my trees for the first few years, but there are other growers that don't. And the trees still survive. They just don't grow as fast the first few years, but they do catch up. And it all depends on what type of soil you're planting them into, because it does stay wet in Oregon. And so it's the other extreme where they can get wet feet as well. And so if you have a really heavy soil, they tend to not like that. And like I said, I have some of that heavy soil on some of my property. And if you Google map my property, you can see, I mean, you could just tell where the bad soil is because the trees aren't, they don't have as large a canopy.
Right.
And, you know, I've lost a couple of trees here and there, but I'll go back and replant them, so.
But in terms of the trunk canker, it seems like the Jefferson has some resistance. And do you have to deal with any foliage issues, foliar blights?
No, but my neighbor just had to spray for stem blight.
Okay.
And he just had to do it for the first time.
Yeah, that's probably going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
Between you and your neighbor, do you have a, like I would classify it as a hedgerow between you, as like a barrier so that you don't have, because I think that that's one of the reasons why I like hedgerows is so much, because if somebody's growing something on one property and has a disease problem, it's not likely to jump as quickly to another field. But my question is, how long does it take before they start producing? Because I know some trees take 7 years, some take 10, some take 15, some take 100.
Yeah, I probably had my first nut that I saw was probably five, because like I said, there were two-year-old trees.
Seven.
So it was probably year five when I saw that first nut out there.
Well, I feel like we've exhausted you with filbert questions, but I have to ask, who's your buyer?
I belong to a co-op.
Oh, okay.
And all the growers, there's two major co-ops. And so everyone gets the same price depending on what variety you have. So basically, once the nuts leave your property, they're out of your hands.
Does the co-op handle the harvest then?
No, I have to get everything set up for the harvest, you know, work with someone to come in and do that. But once they go to the processors where they wash all the nuts and then they dry them as well. Once they get to the processor, they belong to the co-op, basically.
I see. So is the harvest done manually, or do they bring in special equipment?
They bring in special equipment. The hazelnuts do not require a shaker. They all drop naturally.
Oh, okay.
They have a piece of equipment that's called a sweeper. They go and they sweep and make windrows down the row, and then they have a harvester come and pick up the hazelnuts, and it kind of spits out the leaves and the debris and all that. And then another piece of equipment follows behind. Once that hopper gets filled up, the nuts go into the hopper, and they either get hauled off in wooden totes, or it's called a bulk delivery, where they go into a big dump truck.
Okay.
And, well, and haul them away.
I've really learned a lot. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And, you know, because we still have some orchards around here, of like apple orchards, not nut orchards. But we really do value the information that you've given us about hazelnuts and, of course, Monrovia. which is a wonderful company. And we were thrilled to have you on our podcast and to for you to share the information that you have given us.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
So are filberts your favorite tree, Ron, or do you have a favorite species or tree that you engage with at a metaphysical level?
My favorite tree right now is a dogwood. It is a variegated stellar pink, and it came from Rutgers.
Yes.
And right now, the foliage on it is just incredibly pink and it's just gorgeous. And then it's a white variegated leaf when it's, you know, in the spring and summer, and it does get white flowers. So the flowers are, you know, they're okay. You don't really kind of see them in with the foliage, but the growth habit is nice. I tend not to, most of my trees, I kind of let them grow a little free form. That's just me. That's just me. But like I said, right now, the fall color is just fantastic. That's my favorite tree right now.
That's a good call.
Well, that is great. And we thank you so much for being on our podcast.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
I agree. We've learned a lot and we thank you for your time.
Yep.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
The Plant a Trillion Trees podcast is edited by Andromeda Recordings in Hollywood, California. Thank you.